So, no, it's hardwired to it.
Oh, shit.
It's got big lugs in it.
What runs the generator? The propane?
Diesel.
Diesel.
About 270 gallons every 3 days. About 270 gallons every 4 hours or something like that. So, 24 hours of running, so about 3 days. She swallows some diesel.
Yeah, but it's 200 kW, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's quiet, too. I can't believe how quiet it is. It's not that loud.
Okay, we'll call the meeting to order. This is the regular commission meeting for the Port of Brookings Harbor Commission, Wednesday, February 21st, 2024. Let me in the Pledge of Allegiance, please.
I know.
Pledge of Allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Roll call, Daniel.
Larry.
Here.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Here.
Richard.
Here.
And Joe is not here yet.
Are there any modifications, additions, or changes to the agenda? I believe we're going to take the action item G and move that to the first action item.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. She doesn't have to be on the phone with us the whole time. Are there any other changes, additions, or modifications?
Yes, I want to table action item E, the dredge spoils disposal agreement.
Okay, so you want to postpone that to?
Probably our next meeting.
Okay.
All right, anything else? All right, entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Motion to approve agenda as amended.
I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Anybody need to declare a potential conflict of interest?
No.
No. Okay, with that, we will then move action item G to the front. So this is the...
Do you want to do approval of minutes?
Hold on.
That's okay. Just go number three.
Okay. Sorry. Anybody like to approve the minutes of the regular commission meeting for Wednesday, January 17th, and the special meeting on January 24th? I'll make a motion to approve both of those.
Second.
Okay. Now we need to go to public comments. I guess that's the problem on the agenda, huh?
Don't we still need a vote?
Roll call.
So.
It's okay.
Okay.
It's been a whole month since we did the last one.
I know.
He's been busy on the phone.
We already did a roll call.
I know.
Oh, I'm sorry, on the phone.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Richard.
This is what your brain looks like after a day of windmill.
I don't know it.
Okay. Now we go to public comment.
I have not received any public comment.
And there is none in front of me. We go to the management and financial report.
Okay.
Okay. The RV park, it started taking reservations for July. So our 4th of July spots, I believe, now are full. And July is filling up quickly, so we're starting to see some revenue coming from the RV park, which is nice. Staff were able to get out and do weed eating and mowing once. We also are looking at areas of the park that need asphalt repairs. We have put out an RFP already for fixing some of the bad spots, especially on the exit part of it. So we're waiting for those quotes to get back, and as soon as we can get somebody in there, we'll get it paved, at least fixed, to the point where there's not big, massive potholes out there. Marina, dock walks and repairs were frequent due to storm surge. New dock numbers are starting to be installed, so instead of being spray painted on the docks, we got little aluminum plaques that'll go on, make it more legible. Staff pressure washed EF and G docks in Basin 1. Due to the lack of foot traffic and activity on these docks, moss and algae made docks very slick. D-dock will also be done as time allows. Customer reported that there was no power on the end dock. After further investigation, we found that the main power cord was only supplying half the power to the dock. The new cord was installed, and all the boats were moved back to their slips. EMC was out, Jack Aiken was out to look at the slopes at the launch ramp. Those are starting to erode, and we're going to get, I wanted an engineered fix so we can proceed with an RFP before it gets out of control and starts costing us more money. Boat launches and daily moorage and daily trailer storage were very minimal. One telehandler job and two haul-outs. All the commercial receiving docks are up and operational. We are receiving the landing fees for October through December, so that's good. It's been a slower season, so the numbers aren't quite what we hoped, but regardless, it's working out, and we're getting those back. Commercial retail buildings, staff mowed and did some weeds in the retail area. We also put out signs stating caution, slippery when wet, out on the boardwalk, every other bay to where you can see it. We did have a person walking on there, and it was slick, and he slipped. So we're doing the best we can, but with the amount of algae and it being wood, no matter what, it's slick. So we put out some signs to hopefully caution the customers. Maintenance crew did 125 work orders for the month of January. Office staff daily checklists are attached. For FEMA, Billiter Marine came back out to do one more day of clamshell dredging at the southeast corner of Basin 2 due to the heavy aggregate by that culvert. The generator for the dredge arrived. We started it and Stoudemire was out to get familiar with it. Training for the dredge has been scheduled for 15 days starting February 19th. We will continue to dredge until the closing date of March 15th. So on that note, the dredge is in the water, the pipeline's hooked up. We hope to start it. We're hoping for Friday to start it up. So it's, yeah, it's very exciting. We're almost there. Wastewater treatment plant, phase two funding is still under review. RFP is nearing completion. From an engineering standpoint, the NPDES permit is still under review from DEQ. Pacific Seafood is still in deliberations with DEQ on permitting standards for processors. They would like to finish up talking with DEQ and then talk with us about matching funds in February. I've sent out an email to narrow down a date when we can meet with them. I did end up talking to them. We're probably going to be talking to them again sometime in March. We will hope, I think DEQ should be close to done with our permit by then too, and we can talk with them and see what DEQ, if they decide to do anything as far as adjusting any permit standards on individual permits, and how or if that might affect our permit with the processing discharge standards. So we're still moving on with that, and we also got a not in here because I'm just updating you over there. A letter back from SHPO, the State Historic Preservation Office, saying they didn't concur with our with Jack's engineering point that there won't be any cultural disruption in the area. So we are having to contract with an archaeologist and go through some more steps. So We do have an archaeologist. They are starting to look at it, so we will more to come with that. But it's gonna slow us down a little bit. Any questions?
Are you gonna go through these, or do we normally go through
these? I don't typically go through these. This is just kind of for review, and you know.
Okay, I guess I have a question.
Yeah.
On Gary's tasks, is this for a month, a whole month?
Yes, typically this is for the whole month. Any other questions?
Are you satisfied with that?
For what?
Certainly as the port manager?
I am very satisfied with what he's doing.
Okay.
Yes.
The safety, security, and environmental report. Port maintenance discussed knot time and cleat time. Gave them rope and everything, made them practice. As Travis mentioned, we did have one incident that happened in January, and an individual slipped on the boardwalk, so we put slippery when wet signs up, and we also cleaned the boardwalk. Four aces in the port reported five security issues for the month of January, and then I did submit our discharge monitoring report for October 1st. Through December 31st for our 1200D stormwater. And then we also completed one of the four tests for this year that are required.
Question. On the security issues, the overnight parking, no camping, are those typically in the same areas each month when we have those violations? Or are they just random throughout the port?
They're kind of random throughout the port.
Financial.
All right, so for the month ending January 2024, our unrestricted cash and equivalents totaled $571,728. Our restricted cash and equivalents totaled $280,426, with a total checking and savings balance at $852,154. Our total revenue for all funds was $285,544, with our total expenses at $411,325, leaving our net income for January at a negative $125,781. Keep in mind that a lot of our expenses are still waiting for reimbursement, which is what throws that number off so much. Overall, our program revenues are netting in the positive, so we're heading in the right direction. Total income for all funds was at 24.8%, with our general fund revenue at 39.7%. Our total expenditures for all funds is at 25.9%, with general fund expenditures at 51.4%. Last month, I did start looking for a new auditor, as I mentioned to you in our last meeting. I sent out 198 requests for proposals. I received about 15 back that said we're either too far away or we're too busy. I've only received one potential at this point, and I reminded them yesterday that those are due next week, so I'm hoping I'll get at least one. Deadline for those is February 29th, so I'll keep you posted on that. We did purchase an oil water separator using our state local fiscal recovery fund. We paid our lodging taxes, and then on the second page are our expenses for capital projects and where we're at with reimbursement. Any questions?
Well, you mentioned the job opening for an auditor. Is that someone you need to have certified and have a college background, or do you want someone, you know?
They have to be a state registered certified municipal auditor.
Okay.
Only, hopefully, unlikely event we can't find one. What does that leave us?
Yeah.
My next call is to the Oregon Board of Accountancy to find out an answer to that. I don't know.
Auditors are becoming fewer and fewer. There's not very many people that do them, and if they do it, I found that they really don't like FEMA, federal agencies. They don't like getting involved with it. And us, we have a lot of those projects. So there is definitely a deterrence there amongst just a lack of CPAs. And we're a long ways away. I don't really know how that plays too much into today's day and age with email and online meetings, but you know, there's not very many of them out there.
Well, I'm just concerned about the FEMA audit requirements, you know, what's going to happen on that. We've got to do that. Like I told you, I'm really surprised FEMA doesn't have their own auditor that they send out here to sit here for a week and look at the book. But
we did mention to someone through FEMA that we were in the search, and we didn't get much feedback from that person. They kind of wished us the best in our search, but didn't have any recommendations on who to talk to or who to reach out to either. So
once February comes, well, hopefully somebody will give us an RFP and we can look at it, and hopefully it'll be end of February. Yeah, coming down to it, but hopefully we just don't have to go down that road. If not, March we will be figuring out what happens next.
The one firm that I do speak with is familiar with the FEMA audit. They're aware that we need a special audit for that. They're aware, you know, of our audit process. So I'm hoping that at least we'll get one positive proposal. And they're all out the area. Most of them. The one I talked to is based out of Roseburg.
Okay. Yeah, because we used to have an attorney that would travel, and we paid the expense tonight for that. So, okay.
Okay, any further on the matter, folks? Set the motion to accept the manager's report.
I'll make a motion to accept the manager's report and financial report.
I second it.
We have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay. Now, we will go to action items, and we're going to advance the annual Jog Your Memory Fun Run to the first item.
Okay. Sarah, I believe, is on the line. Sarah, are you there?
I am. Hi, thank you for having me, guys. I'm Sarah Dobson. I'm the sales and marketing director for Four Pines, Azalea Gardens, and Monarch Gardens Memory Care.
Thank you. So Azalea Gardens Senior Living Center is looking to host an annual color fun run, I think, to raise funds for Alzheimer's Association. Last year they hosted this event at the Azalea Park, and now you're wanting to expand it to the port, is that correct?
Yeah, so after I worked very closely with Bruce Ellis last year with this event, and during that time we decided that A, we would start planning a little bit earlier, and B, that we would kind of co-host it with the Curry County Chamber of Commerce Insider Events and our communities, sorry about that, to at the port as opposed to Azalea Park, just because, I mean, the port is absolutely beautiful, and we feel like it would be, well, less of the rules and regulations, of course. A lot of people are a little skeptical, especially vendors coming out to Azalea Park, and I just feel like the port would be a major highlight to the Jog Your Memory Color Run.
Okay. So is all the proceeds going to be donated then? You said vendors. How is the vendors going to work with this? Are they just vendors there to sell things? Are they donating the proceeds, or...
Yeah, so how that would work is there would be a vendor fee, and that vendor fee would go straight to donations. The sponsorships, however, will help, of course, get supplies for the event and make it the biggest, best Jog Your Memory Color Run that the town's seen. And then the access that we would have left over from the sponsorships would go straight into donations. So everybody registering, all of the vending fees and all of that would go straight to donations. It would just be the sponsorships that would go into purchasing things such as like the t-shirts, signage, anything that we have to put around town. My question for you all is, I had spoken with Bruce and we kind of came up with this idea of possibly making you guys a premium sponsor. So your logo would be on the t-shirts, all of the signage, posters posted throughout Brookings, and along the coastline as well as I expand my outreach for it. Social media shout outs, radio, any news segment coverage that we get, you guys would all be highlighted throughout the process of planning and also throughout the event itself.
Okay, and what you're asking for the port is to donate the event fee for the boardwalk area. Is that correct?
Yes. The event permit fee, I believe it was.
Yeah, okay. Board?
What's that cost?
It's $700 is the event fee.
Right.
For the boardwalk.
One day.
For one day. It is for one day. Is that correct?
Yep. It would be for September 7th from about 10 a.m. to about 4 p.m. And then the premium sponsorship package would be priced at $750. So I figured I would just extend the offer to you guys to see if you wanted to join us in the fight against Alzheimer's.
Okay, thank you. So I left this motion blank. I just wanted you guys to decide how you wanted to proceed with this. We do, you know, for nonprofit things like this, we do do this for other ones, just so, you know.
Right. Well, and the Alzheimer's Association is going to be involved as well and going to be a co-host. We are actually partnering with the Longest Day through the Alzheimer's Association. So the Oregon chapter will be there and present as well. And they'll be also doing promotions and helping promoting nationwide opposed to just in the Oregon area.
What about all the other requirements that go along with an event on the boardwalk? How is that going to be covered?
Everything else with the event would still have to be, you know, complied with. Insurance and,
of course,
you know, all that kind of stuff. I think all that, as far as our event agreement stands, it we're just talking about the fee and the sponsorship of it.
Yes, absolutely. I believe we already have the insurance handled.
For my edification, what is a color run? Familiar with the term.
So the color run, we held our first annual color run last year, and what it is like colored chalk, non-toxic and all washable, biodegradable, of course, but it's chalk, and as you are going through this mile-long loop, as you're jogging through, we have people on the sidelines that are either spraying you with like colored water mixture with it or throwing chalk at you, so by the end of the color run you're completely covered and super colorful.
Oh,
yeah. Oh, yes.
Okay, thank you for that.
How about a shower?
Absolutely.
Okay.
We're excited for it. I think it's going to be fun.
So, any more questions or comments?
I just want to clarify, right now, this motion is just for the one-day $700. It's not the... sponsor.
Yes, it would just be for the September 7th, just that day.
Thank you. Okay.
Make a motion to approve donating this one day of the boardwalk to the color room.
2024. I second it. Okay. So just to be clear, what we're doing is we are waiving the fee, and that would be part of our sponsor.
Thank you so much.
Okay, we're not done yet.
Okay.
Give a call for a vote.
I'm like, oh, that was quick.
All right, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. There you go. Now you go.
Now you go.
Yay! Okay. Thank you all so much. I can't wait to meet you all in person. I look forward to it. We're going to have a good time.
Thank you for your comments and for being with us.
Of course. Thank you. It's been an honor joining you, and thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. Have a great day.
All right. That brings
you too. I look forward to working with you.
Brings us to action item A, the Harbor Corner Market lease agreement.
Okay. Raymond and Robin Madison, who purchased a corner market in 2020, they have now put it up for sale and sold it to Mr. Lane. He's been working in there. He's been in there, Stephen Lane, for a while. So this will give him a lease for 3 years, ending in 2027 with one additional three-year option to keep the Harbor Corner Market there.
Okay. Questions? All conditions of the current lease will stay in place other than ownership.
Yep. And the base rental rate goes to our current pricing right now since it's a new lease.
So that will be an increase to him?
Yeah. Yeah, the lease there is attached. It will be $920.93 a month.
Okay.
You ready for a motion?
Yes, sir.
I make a motion to approve the Harbor Corner Market lease with Stephen Lane commencing February 1, 2024 to January 31, 2027.
Second. Okay, we have a motion and second, Danielle.
Larry.
Yes.
Dan.
Yes.
Sharon.
Yes.
Joe.
Yes.
Richard.
Yes. Brings us to action item B. Removing the Port Construction Fund, Resolution 2024-02.
Okay. The Port Construction Fund was made to track the construction costs for the RV park remodel project. That was required by the loan documents. That project is now completed, and the tracking of the construction costs is no longer required. Removing the unnecessary funds should be done to make accounting and auditing easier. And a resolution is required to eliminate the fund.
Okay.
How much money was left over there, Travis? Well, from the construction, or did we go over budget on that?
We went over budget.
I thought.
There is a $2,500 balance that we keep in that account, and it would be, or in that fund, excuse me, and it would be transferred to our general fund.
Motion.
Motion to approve Resolution 2024-02, eliminating Port Construction Fund.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Sharon. Or Richard, sorry.
Yes.
It's a rough day today.
Are we close to the sun or something? Okay. Action item C, June regular commission meeting date.
Well, this is an easy one. June 19th, our June meeting is June 19th, which falls on a holiday. So I'm recommending that we move it to Tuesday, June 18th. So it'll be one day earlier than what our typical board meetings are, just for June.
Okay, question.
Do we really need a motion to move that?
I think so. I think it's really probably not. It's about your notifications. You can notify it. This is just an extra
insurance.
Letting everybody know the best that we can, and then we'll get that, out as soon as we can. So those of you that do attend will know that it's a day earlier.
Change the calendar.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll make a motion to approve changing June 2024 regular commissioner meeting date from Wednesday, June 19th to Tuesday, June 18th, 2024.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes.
Action item D, appoint the budget committee.
This is appointing a vacancy on the budget committee. The port has one vacancy on our budget committee. We advertised the vacancy on the port website and in the current pilot. We received one application. His application is attached. It's Richard Contestable. He's been on our budget committee for quite a while, quite a few years now. So that will be for position number 8 and will be good through 2027. It's a 3-year term.
Okay.
I make a motion to approve Richard Contestable for position number 8 on the Port of Brookings Harbor Budget Committee for a term of 3 years ending on June 30th, 2027. I'll second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Action item E, soil disposal agreement.
So we're going to table this one.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, just reason why is DEQ has had another person review what we have that might actually lax our, the restrictions we have to give people or the information that we have to give out to people for residential use. But I'm waiting to see exactly what they come up with. So maybe we don't have to give them much information. Believe it or not.
Yeah, I'm making sure I'm hearing that right. DEQ
yes.
might relax something.
Yeah, not as much requirement on the residential owner for reporting, because it was that the residential owner was going to have to fill out a DEQ form and, you know, identify where it's going, how, you know, what its intended use is. And now there's another person at DEQ that has looked at it and said, I don't think they have to do that. So we're just, the commercial end of it is still all the same. The commercial guys still have to have the form and mark where it's going. So I'm just still working through before we approve it going to residential or going anywhere that we have it all in order.
I'm really rasping hard with the concept that when you go get free dirt, you got to tell DEQ.
Well, that's kind of where the new guy has came in and is saying, he's like, well, if it's clean, suitable for clean fill, they don't need to report on it. So we're working through that, but we're going to table it and I'll have the answer for us next month.
All right, action item F, delinquent account write-off.
Okay, we have an account for Mr. Naftali Daniel that has reached our limit of attempts at getting payment for mortgage, storage, and disposal of his vessel. Mr. Daniels attempted for a few months to sell his boat and then just stopped paying his bill. We have since gone through the process of taking ownership and disposing of the vessel, and now I am asking permission to send his account to our collection agency because he's been non-responsive in paying his bill.
This is a pleasure boat, not a commercial?
It is a commercial.
This was a commercial boat that he let all of his permits and his requirements lapse on. So he had no insurance, no documentation, no current permits.
Which boat is it, April?
It was the Lady Jean.
The one that Matt brought up.
I make a motion to approve the delinquent write-off or account write-off for the amount of $4,692.19 for the account receivable, submit to the port collection agency, and proceed with litigation if necessary.
I second it.
Okay, we have a motion and second. Danielle?
Larry?
Yes.
Dan?
Yes.
Sharon?
Yes.
Joe?
Yes.
Richard?
Yes. Okay, that brings us to the information items, starting with the FEMA.
Excuse me. So some of this we went over in my manager report. Billiter came out and removed an additional 270 yards from basin two. Our new dredge from Dragpool, like I said, did arrive in port, Seattle port on February 1st. It was delivered to Brookings on Friday last week, which was the 16th. Dragpool representative was here on Monday, February 19th, to assist with the assembly of the dredge and employee training until March 2nd. The latest the port can dredge is March 14th. We plan to begin dredging again in October of 2024. Once the material is dry enough to load out, the county will begin hauling what's in the boatyard off-site, and then our current dredging expenses and budget remaining. We've spent a total of $883,567, and we have $1,563,504 remaining with our budget. So overall, our expenses are looking good, and everything we're doing is pretty much on track. I'm happy to see the cushion we have with the budget remaining. So any questions on FEMA, dredging? Anything of that?
Our current plan is for what, 5 years dredging?
It's going to be about 5 years, yeah.
The money left in the fund is just cost.
Years to maintenance, you know, anything that comes up. Most of it for our employees, most of it's going to go to labor and haul off. So our guys keep track of all their time. We submit that payroll to FEMA, their time's reimbursed, and then a good portion of this is worst case scenario that we have to pay, that this material nobody else wants and we have to pay full load for it to go. So that's, there's a cushion there, but you know, we'll have to wait and see exactly what our haul off costs are, because that could get expensive.
Operational for this subject here, is it fuel or is it electric for the generator?
The generator is ran by diesel.
Diesel.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, okay. And it supplies the power to the dredge.
So I do have a question.
Mm-hmm.
The tank you said underneath the generator is about 40 gallons? Or no, it's 240.
200, I think it's about 240 gallons or something like that. 220.
So how are we filling that? We got a slip tank that we're transporting around?
We bought a transfer tank that's on a pallet with a manual pump that we can move from our fuel dock back over to the generator to fuel the generator where it sits. That was part of some of our expenses with what we've already bought.
Okay. Now for another really stimulating thing, the public meeting law training requirement.
Okay. So on January 1st, 2024, House Bill 2805 went into effect, adding new mandatory public meeting training requirements for every member of a governing body with a total expenditures of $1 million or more per fiscal year. These governing body members must receive public meetings law training at least once during their term of office. The Oregon Government Ethics Commission planned to begin providing public meeting law training this month. Unfortunately, the webinars have been removed from their site and are no longer available, but I think that's changed. Are they up yet?
They're not up yet, but I got an update that they're planning on having those available by the middle of the year. I believe by July is when they're expecting.
So they made a law, but they're not currently ready to roll it out.
I did contact the ethics.
You did?
People, and yeah, they said that it would be a while before. But they'll send out a notice to the people that have a website that, you know, we get email from them.
Right.
They'll notify us.
So the port staff will let the board know when the training becomes available, and just got to go through it once during your term. And I do believe if you get elected for an additional term, you would have to do it again. I believe that's how it works. It's each serving term. So just keep that in mind.
Yeah. And the good news is that if you take this for us and somebody else requires it, this one doesn't count. Okay, information item D.
DEQ 1200Z stormwater test results. The port completed its first of our four yearly stormwater tests on January 17th. Samples were taken early morning. We have 12 hours to take the samples once discharge begins. Test results show that only one place failed in the boatyard for copper and suspended solids. Because the boatyard outfall is already under Tier 2 status for copper, a corrective action report has already been completed by an engineer to correct the benchmark exceedance by installing an oil-water separator. October 18th, the board approved the state local fiscal recovery funds to be spent on purchasing an oil water separator for the boatyard. That will be arriving February 29th. So again, our stormwater tests are getting better. I mean, they look good in a lot of other places considering what we have. The boatyard historically has always been a problem, but we need to pave it. I mean, ultimately, it needs to be paved, but we're hoping that the oil-water separator will at least help flow water down, and we're going to keep adding more bags in front of it, and hopefully it changes our test results. So March, probably after we're done dredging, you know, mid-March, we'll probably get started with trying to install that.
Okay. Information item D, the SEIS property casualty insurance services renewal.
So I just wanted everybody to kind of see this, that our property and casualty insurance did go up 11.3%. It's now at $156,059 a year for 2024. I think we're paying $11,000 something a month, and now it's going to be $13,000 a month. So it went up quite a bit, but that's what it is. I just wanted everybody to see that it was going up.
Is that something we can
shop?
Yeah.
We can.
I mean, it is what it is. But
yeah, we can. SDIS assures us that they are constantly looking at other policies. Granted, they're our insurance company, but and it's really hard to beat what SDAO and SDIS can provide for special district ports for us.
And that's a scary thought. When I read this, my reaction was, "That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money."
We have a lot of property.
Yeah. Okay. Information item E: the draft resolution, reserve fund resolution.
Okay. So this is something. This is why this is a draft, because I wanted you guys to be able to ask questions before we actually approved it and put it in. But every 10 years, the reserve fund needs to be reviewed and restated what it's for and how you plan to use those funds. Our current reserve fund, Port Resolution 307 Reserve Fund, was established in 1998 for dock maintenance and future dock replacements. Per our records, this reserve fund was never abolished, but was reintroduced in 2017 to begin saving funds for future projects or unexpected expenditures. The Port Strategic Plan recommends maintaining an operating reserve of 90 days of expenditures. The Port Strategic Business Plan also recommends targeting at least 15% of each year's general fund ending balance to a dredging maintenance reserve fund. Resolution number 2023-02, landing fees, established collecting landing fees to be placed into a reserve fund under a line item titled landing fees. These will be allocated to repair, maintenance, and or upgrades needed to the receiving docks. So is what we are proposing is to have four separate reserves that are clearly identified under our reserve fund. The first one being a general reserve that would provide a goal to meet the recommendation in our strategic business plan. The capital replacement reserve that would continue our plan to replace current port assets. a dredging reserve that would provide a goal to meet the recommendation in our strategic plan, and a landing fee reserve that would meet the goal of Resolution 2023-02 to use landing fees for receiving dock repairs, maintenance, and upgrades. So, resolution is the next page. It referenced Exhibit A, where we stated what the purpose was. And then each one, so our general reserve, I'll just go over it again because it should just be said. The purpose of the general reserve fund, general reserve, is to provide working capital to meet cash flow needs during normal operations and to support the operation, maintenance, and administration of the port. The reserve is intended to reduce impacts from unforeseen events such as increased utility costs, loss of port customers, severe storm impacts, litigation, and legislative actions. This reserve ensures that operations can continue should there be significant events that impact cash flows. Our target reserve, the target reserve is established as a range between a minimum of 60 days of the annual operation and maintenance expense and a maximum of 90 days. Our monthly, our current monthly expenses average about $189,000. Capital replacement reserve. The purpose, the capital replacement reserve, is used to fund future replacement of capital assets and capital projects. The reserve provides for timely repair and replacement of port capital facilities. Our target reserve amount established is 2% of the fixed asset value. As of 2022-2023 asset list, our asset value is at just over $19 million. Our dredging reserve, the purpose of the dredging reserve is to provide funds for yearly maintenance dredging within basins 1 and 2. 2% of mortgage fees are transferred monthly into the dredging reserve. Target reserve for the dredging reserve is $100,000. Landing fee reserve, the purpose of the landing fee reserve is to repair, maintain, and upgrade existing receiving docks. The target reserve amount established is 10% of the fixed asset value of the receiving docks, which is almost, it's $4,880,000, which was given to us in 2023. So our target reserve summary, which is at the bottom of the page, our target would be $378,000 for general reserve, and currently right now there would be $300,000 for that. However, the star next to it is that $139,000 of it is from a property sale that is to be used for matching funds on the wastewater treatment plant. And if we don't use them there, then it will go back to Business Oregon and go to our debt. Our capital reserve, capital replacement reserve, would be $450,000. That is the 2% of the $19 million. Right now, with the current funds that we have in our reserve fund, we'd be placing $123,736 in there. So we're still quite a bit under it, but this is for a 10-year outlook of what we're trying to get to. The dredging reserve would be, our target would be $100,000. Currently, right now, we have $50,000 set aside for a dredge reserve. And then landing fee, our target would be $488,000. Currently, right now, there's $2,500. Our total target reserves would be $1,416,000. And currently, right now, in our reserves, we'd have $476,236. So, long ways to go. Their targets, we've always kind of struggled to get there with where our debt is, but we're going to continue trying to put this money away and eventually get us to where we need to be.
Questions, Travis? I'm sorry, go ahead, Larry. When you kept mentioning current proposed reserves, you always said would be. Is this what we would have if we'd have done it, or this is what we currently have under those proposed reserve?
Proposed is what we currently have.
Okay.
So in our reserve fund, we currently have $476,000.
How far would $100,000, if we had a completed dredging fund of $100,000 in reserves, how far would that last us with our dredge?
I'm really trying to establish that right now. you know, by what we have out there. I would say with haul off and man time, probably 2 years. Okay. Now that we own the equipment and, you know, our, if you really got down to it, our guys are already budgeted in, so you really wouldn't have to do that. You'd be just looking at cost. So I think probably 2 years is what it would get us. But I'm hopefully going to narrow that number down once we get this dredge up and going, and I can kind of start gauging how much time cost that we're actually putting into dredging itself.
Okay. Thank you.
Previously, we spoke about the dredge, and there's like, what, $1.5 million or something in there?
Yeah.
How is that money or funds different than this dredge reserve?
The dredge reserve is what we pull from our mortgage customers.
So we have this $1 million sitting here, and we're still going to bank money as it comes in.
Yes.
But you said the $1.5 million should cover us
for probably five years.
For after the
pandemic. Exactly. This dredge reserve would hopefully get us to where we can continue dredging, you know, past that in the future when that money's gone.
And then matching funds for a wastewater treatment plant. I thought Pacific Seafood was going to pick up our matching funds.
That's not, they have shown interest in that they're willing to, but we have not had any guarantees from them. And, you know, with that project up and coming and the costs that we've already put out in, with phase one, the engineering, everything that we've got to now, this gives us an account that we can pull our what we've already expended out of it. And it leaves us with coming to the matching fund to the table with something, you know, not that we have to spend it. I mean, it would be definitely our interest for Pacific Seafood to pick up the whole tab and then this money goes straight to our debt because then we'd be paying that down. That would be great. But I wanted to make sure we were coming to the table with something somewhere, you know, for fun doing that.
So if Pacific Seafood steps up to the plate, agrees to pay matching funds for us, that will release this to, you said, pay debt.
It'll go straight to Business Oregon to fulfill the agreement that the port's made with them, that any assets that we sell, 80% of it goes to IFA, and then we retain 20% of it in our reserve fund.
Do we have anything in place or a time frame for Pacific Seafood to let us know what to do?
I'm hoping in March. I've been talking to them. I talked to Pacific Seafood a week ago, Dan and Amy with Pacific Seafood. They are still having conversations with DEQ, and there's a lot. These permits all over Oregon are kind of all at a standstill right now due to the conversations that are happening about the permit requirements. And
so we're hoping that by the end of March we'll have a little better idea of what Pacific Seafood's going to do.
Yes.
And DEQ
and our permit, and there's still a lot of moving parts with that whole thing, but I'm hoping that we're getting down to, like I said, our permit to DEQ went to them in October, and they told us it could take almost 6 months for them to do it, so that would put it in the March time frame. So I'm hoping that their Pacific Seafood's conversations get ironed out, our permit's going to get ironed out. I'm hoping all that falls at the same time. And if DEQ does change anything or does decide to adjust the requirements that are needed, it could mean that we don't need as much of a plant as well to meet the discharge requirements. So if that's the case, things are still going to kind of slow down again so we can readjust what our plant's going to look like to meet the requirements, so we're not adding more equipment than we'll need.
So under the capital reserve, we talked about capital assets. I'm assuming that's mainly building
stocks, mainly buildings and docks.
All right. Any other questions? Bring this to commissioner's comments.
We got one more. We should have information.
should have stayed home today. Sorry. Capital outlay plan for fiscal year 24-25.
Okay, so for our upcoming budget, staff and I kind of went through one end of the port to the other, very similar to what the our capital outlay looks like, but this is more geared towards items that need to be fixed at the smaller infrastructure items, not such the bigger capital outlay, but there is big ones in here as well. But I wanted you to see the list that of things that I think really kind of need to be looked at or start thinking about. There is some hopes and wishes in there, and then there's some absolute have-tos in here. But the total, by our estimates, you know, we have about $1.4, $1.5 million worth of upgrades, fixes to do. A lot of it is paving and slope repair, which add up to be a lot. In our budget, I plan to adjust how we have been using capital outlay and use it more how it's directed to be used. For capital outlay, a project that is cost more than $5,000 and has a life expectancy of over a year is actually should be considered a capital outlay. We typically use a lot of that money in repairs and maintenance, which we're going to try and separate those two a little bit more. So ideally, I would like to put about $200,000 into capital outlay, and it should bring down our repairs and maintenance and go up in capital outlay a little bit more. Granted, this is kind of just information of what I'm leaning to, but I also wanted you guys to look at this and put in, have any input. If what we put over here on the far right column here is $196,000, 7 projects to do for the year. But anything else that you guys see, you know, please come and let me know. We can talk about it. This is definitely up for discussion. And then we also went through and by the numbers on the left in order, there's pictures with locations with the cost estimates of our staff cost of what they're going to cost. So, like I said, more for information, feedback, if anybody has any, or if you think that something might need to be addressed more than others, just open for feedback on it. So it doesn't have to be right now, but if you guys hear or see anything that you want to be adjusted, this is something that I'm going to be kind of including in our budget coming up. So it's just kind of some precursors to the budget.
Well, you don't even have the RV park, all the potholes and everything that's
I'm hoping to do it under our budget right now. And it does, where is it? RV park, storm drains in Main Road, number 26. So if we wanted to do the whole RV park, just overlaying it and putting 2 inches over the top, it'll be about $152,000.
Can they overlay that?
Well, that's that would be the cheapest way we could do it.
I don't think they can overlay that.
I don't know. If we were to start over and say we wanted to redo that whole front row, you're probably looking at $400,000 to $500,000 because you're going to be going through. There's no storm drains in there. That's the main issue. We're going to be taking all the sand out of one that I know does discharge out into the ocean. The rest of them, from what I can remember and what I've been told, I think they're just boxes in the ground with no pipes connected to them. And the only one that does discharge is at the highest point of the RV park when you pull in. So it leaves another 1,000 feet of runway for water to run down. And there's no storm drains in the back row either. So as much as I would like to say paving it would fix it, until the water is controlled better, it will constantly be a bear. The amount of water that runs over it currently down there, that we paved, you know, it was 2 years ago, we paved the front part of that to fix it because it was really bad, and now we're going to be going back and still doing it. So at this point, I wish we could do more. Right now, we're just going to have to kind of keep putting Band-Aids on it the best we can to make sure, you know, it's drivable as possible. And hopefully in the near future, you know, like I said, debt is coming closer and closer to being paid, which is going to open up a lot more money, you know, 7 to 10 years down the road still, but it's getting closer. And then we can also start looking at grants, you know, maybe a Parks and Rec grants to do it. Those with the amount of money that our port has are 60-40, 40% being matching. So even in a $500,000 project, we're still going to be, you know, putting quite a bill for that. But it's something to look at.
But after these rain events slow down here and before the RV park starts getting busy, we really, because so many, and I just don't want to see anybody hurt, tripping and falling in those holes. So, you know, just whatever we can do to try to see what we can afford.
Yep.
To make it safe.
Yep. So, like I said, anything with those, anybody, even the public, you know, if there's some major things that, you know, if you guys see or want to bring to my attention, you could always call and we can talk about it and see if it can fit.
Okay. Now we're Commissioner Collins.
I do have a comment, and I'm not harping on it, Travis, but I've had a lot of people tell me about the holes on the...
Well, I will say...
I said Travis knows all about it. He's been filling it up, but with the weather conditions and stuff, things aren't in their favor.
Yeah,
so,
and I mean, as it rains and these storms come, I think more people drive through there.
I know.
And every car, 2 splashes in a pothole at 1,200 times a day.
I told them.
Yes, we are. I am aware of it. I drive through there every day, too. I know it's tough. It's...
But I just...
Thank you.
Told him I'd bring it up for him.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple. Obviously, I'm pretty distracted. So the things that are keeping me up at night now are salmon and windmills. So salmon is starting. So the Pacific Council website contains the review of the 2023 fishery. So that talks about the number of fish that were caught in the escapement back to the rivers. By next Monday, I expect that they will have posted on their website a document called Preseason Report 1, which is the abundance forecast, which is what we use to set the seed. So on March the 4th, I will have the dubious honor of driving to Fresno, California for that first meeting where we develop the season. So I don't know what to tell you at this point. Preliminarily, things are a little rugged. They changed the COHO model this year. And included 9 environmental factors in it that the model selects. Things like salinity and dissolved oxygen and temperature and pH and all that stuff in there. So it's wonked that model big time. The former model that we were using last year's data, knowing how many fish we actually got back, it over forecast by 65%. The new model only over forecast by 7%, so it's an improvement, but it cuts the number of available coho. I think we're looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of 430,000 this year. I would have even asked me 2 weeks ago, based on the Jack Escape and the Columbia River, I'd told you close to 2 million. So I don't know where that's going to take us. Windmills. So all day yesterday, the PFMC Marine Planning Committee that I'm on sat and talked about windmills. We're trying to react to the California leases. So California has leased 3 areas. There are 3 companies now that are actively in the process of beginning development. BOEM completely blindsided Oregon. They released these 2 areas for lease. So by October, we should have some idea of who, if anybody, who's going to want to lease those. The process in California is that once those leases are set, then those companies are going to spend 2 years collecting baseline data. So they're already contracted with these giant 300-foot research vessels that are going to go out there, and they have these sea skimmers that go down, and so they're going to characterize the bottom, do some work in the sediment itself. They use the GPS thing to hold it stationary, and they go down and bore down, and so they're going to get a complete characterization of what the bottom looks like, which directs their engineering effort on what they're going to have to do to put one of those things out there. They anticipate they won't see any construction until probably 2027. That's how long it's going to take them to go. Oregon, on the other hand, we're trying to react now to the fact that the leases are set, but I think we still have an opportunity. So part of the other thing that's happening in California is they have to come up with a communications plan. So the company has to establish communications with the community, including the fishermen. So they have appointed, each company has appointed a fisheries liaison person that works directly with fishermen. And part of their activities is to start talking to fishermen about, okay, what can we do to avoid impacting you, if possible? If you're a trawler, you're pretty much doomed. But if you troll, there's probably a chance you can fish in this thing. The other thing that they're doing is they're working on making sure there's good communication with fishermen when they're out there doing work. They want to make sure that they avoid things like crab season and big high activity times. Let the fleet know when they're going to be out there and what they're going to do, because none of the stuff that they're using to do surveys is towed. So it's all autonomous. So you won't have a barge out there that's 200 feet behind the ship, that kind of thing. So there is going to be a lot more in community engagement once the leases are set. Everybody's beating Bohm up because they don't come talk to us. That's not their job. Their job is to lease that stuff. And they've heard from Oregon ad nauseum about things that we want to see. And they just sort of, they have reduced the Coos Bay area significantly. It's much smaller than the original footprint, but still there. So anyway, that's what I know about windmills. I'll keep you posted. And I would not go to bed at night thinking that they aren't going to happen.
Oh, they're happening. So that's a good thing.
Richard, on the windmill subject, I have one question. What do we people for? What do they benefit from this?
Well, that's an interesting question, Mike, because I get asked a lot, why are you involved with windmills? I'll put it to you as bluntly as I can. I'm really tired of living in a town with very few economic opportunities here for citizens. Fred Meyer, number one employer in the county. Medical, number two. Lumber mill, number three. After that, if you don't work in hospitality, you don't have a job. So coming from Nevada, where we, whether we liked it or not, got sucked into gold mines, which in my industry, I hated gold mines. I hated the whole destruction. From the perspective of the community, that was a huge benefit. Cities like Elko, Ely, Battle Mountain, Winnemucca, Tonopah, Round Mountain, I mean, they have high-paying jobs, insurance benefits. The number one Caterpillar dealer in the United States in terms of volume is in Elko, Nevada. So I'm looking at this whole process as maybe an opportunity for a different type of industry. I don't want to see the current industry displaced, and we've made that clear to them. You don't take fishing out and replace it with a few jobs. You know, fishing here, and that's something we want to maintain. But if we can have some other opportunities here for employment to keep people here, I'm for that. In terms of the port, assuming that it doesn't completely disrupt fishing activity, they're most likely what we will have here are the service boats. We're not going to get any of the big boats, but when they start surveying the routes coming in from the ocean, they're going to be using 30-foot vessels. So they'll will moor here. They're going to want them moor here. They're going to want to be here for crew changes and fuel and all that kind of stuff. And they said that they intend to use local ports. So I see advantages for the port. In terms of mitigation, I don't know how you, the one mitigation thing I would tell everybody is don't get into selling your boat. That's a bad idea, because they'll buy you out. That's what they did to the cattle ranchers in Nevada who were complaining because they were drying up their springs. They just bought the rent. So, but we're a long ways from that stuff yet. So, you know, I don't know. Mitigating, if they ask me, how would you mitigate impacts to recreational fishermen, I would tell them to improve the port. That's a direct benefit to the fishermen. Whatever it may be, redo the boat ramp, or whatever it may be, that's a way to do that. And we really should be thinking about mitigation.
Yeah.
Because the weak point for these people is getting those two permits. They got to get a federal and state permit. So everything they do will depend on getting that permit. So that's where we have some leverage as groups and as a state. We've got a little leverage on them too. The other thing is they have to do what's called a federal compliance review. So if the state produces enforceable policies, then they have to comply with those and make sure that federal actions aren't in conflict with those policies. So there's some things that are coming, but you know, you're talking state agencies are going to have to gear up. And so we've got a House Bill 4080 right now going through our legislature that talks about the development of a roadmap to help guide this. And that's going to probably be under the leadership of Land Conservation and Development. Mm-hmm. And the Department of Energy, Oregon State Department of Energy will be in there. Obviously, Fish and Wildlife and all the others will be there. So there's things happening. But windmills are coming.
Yeah, I would think during that litigation process, windmills do, you know, port's going to benefit from use and taxing the in and out and then renting. I get all that. That's a good thing. The one thing that I would like to see on this board is some kind of agreement that that some of the local Curry County residents would be eligible to get those jobs, state jobs, federal jobs. So it's just not coming from that entity alone.
Well, there is, in 4080, there is a requirement. This group that I'm working on with a roadmap, lots of labor involved in that, electricians, pipe fitters, all that kind of stuff. There are requirements in there that any jobs, labor that's required will be local union labor. So they are not going to be bringing in contractors from Korea or someplace else to do this. They should be locally sourced jobs. There's been a lot of discussion because about Humboldt Bay, because they've selected that, or they think they're selecting that as a construction site for these platforms. I don't think it's going to work because the dredging requirement is going to whack the eelgrass, and there's a lot of things that go along with protecting eelgrass. The base of these things are 425 feet across. The channel at Humboldt is 490 feet, I think, across. So they're going to have to figure out, first of all, how to tow it through that, and secondly, how to tow it through there without blocking everybody else's use. So the timing will be critical. But just imagine, based on each one of these things, that's 4 acres in size. So we're talking a major piece of stuff to go off.
What is Q's Bay channel? Do we know how wide that? I don't know how wide that one is.
It's probably wide enough to get it out there, but Q's Bay is just not in consideration. They can't, where they wanted to build them is right next to the airport, because they're too close to the airport with a 1,000-foot structure, and they can't put them in. So they're looking at building them in Eureka and in Long Beach. Those are the two places that I've heard that they're looking. And Seattle, of course, is saying, oh, no, wait about us. So I don't know.
So, then they drag them out here?
They'll drag them out here and set them up.
Like a barge?
Well, you think about Q's Bay.
And you will see them.
Oh, yeah.
It'll be 17 miles offshore, and it's the top, the tip of the blade is 1,000 feet off the ocean, so you'll see them. But I look at the lighthouse, and on beautiful sunny days, there's a lot of days I can't see the lighthouse. And other days, it looks like it's 100 feet tall. So,
yes.
Anyhow, I will keep you advised about what I know about lighthouses. Or not lighthouses, windmills. I really need to just defrag myself from this. I'm really just,
Are you sure you're ready for another meeting?
No, I'm not. This is sitting on your butt for 9 hours.
Is the in-water work period, is that a federal thing set up as a federal thing, or is that a state requirement?
State.
State? So I wonder how that's going to work when they start building these platforms.
And out there?
Well, it'll affect dredging, obviously, and some of that kind of stuff. Construction, I don't know very well. But I can't imagine, I don't know what the draft on one of these things is, but I can't imagine them tearing up Humboldt Bay to the extent that they are going to put 200 acres out there to put on the pond. I just can't see that happening.
And with that even being said, I mean, the Aquinnah comes and dredges our port in, what, June? Which is no state in water work, period. And it's moving something that big and trying to be out there, you're going to have to do it on the better days that there are anyways. So I would imagine their work periods aren't going to be dictated too much.
Well, I was pretty struck by the amount of money those companies are going to have to spend to get started. If you take a 300-foot vessel would have a crew of how many people on it? 20, 30?
Minimum.
They're going to sea for 6 weeks at a time. They're going to stay at sea for 6 weeks and then come in, change crews, replenish. I don't know what that's going to cost, but that's not chump change. I'd also start for something like that. So, anyway.
The only thing I've got to comment about that is that, though I do see them coming, I don't... Europe has a lot, has at least two wind leases, offshore wind leases, floating platform style, if I understand it correctly, but they have yet to sell.
Portugal has them in place.
Well, I'm saying these, the because the companies are saying without subsidies, they can't afford. And so there's two leases over there in, off of Europe, England and Scotland are sitting vacant because no one wants to touch them. Because
what we're hearing is that Europe is completely abandoning offshore wind and going to nukes. Yep. But that's their future is nuclear power.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just, you know, the leases in California amounted to somewhere in the neighborhood of $350 or $400 million for the leases. So there's big money involved. And these are all foreign companies, from primarily from Denmark. And
yes, European countries are the ones to do an investment.
If the windmills, county commissioners, gave it a hard no, is it the port's obligation to unify with the county commissioners and also give a hard no on the subject? Or, you know, close the door completely, so to speak?
Well, I guess you'd have to ask everybody's opinion. In my opinion, I'm not slamming the door on that for the reasons I told you. I see some opportunities and advantages. I think the county was very short-sighted when they did that. I didn't think it through, but, you know, that's their decision. I just think that having had that gold mine experience, I'd keep an open mind about this stuff. The profits are way different. You know, a lot of those companies, when they built those mines, were making a profit at $200 an ounce for gold. So you can imagine what their profit margin is today. It's massive. Power isn't going to be like that. That's one of the questions, is this power even cheap enough to sell, because they're finding out it costs a lot more to generate that power than they originally thought. So a lot of their estimates are not good. So they're thinking now that, you know, the kilowatt hour rate is going way up. So I, you know, it's all up in the air.
Yeah. Just know about the gold rush. It wasn't the people that were digging for gold that got rich. It was the cattlemen selling steaks.
Yeah, well, in this case, the guy's driving. Guy's driving the haul packs.
Yeah.
Or making money. So you imagine a business comes into your town and says, we have a job that's going to pay you $28 an hour with full benefits. You don't have to know a damn thing. Just come over, get on the bus, we'll take you to the job, and we'll teach you what you need to know.
That's what I'd like to see happen if the windmills come in to this community, Curry County. It's just that.
Well, from my experience, if the market's there, somebody will fill it. Our next regular meeting date is Wednesday, March 20th, 2024, 2 o'clock, and with that, we will adjourn.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Good night, Tom. We'll see. Going to the city. I was, but I am so tired.